Welcome to Banfield. Do we really need to cancel Christmas again? For the second straight year, COVID has cast a shadow over the holidays. Cases and hospitalizations are rocketing up, and there's even talk of a return to lockdown. As of today, Omicron is the most common coronavirus variant in the United States, accounting for nearly three quarters of the new COVID cases. The head of the National Institutes of Health says the Omicron variant could lead to, are you ready for this? As many as 1 million new cases every day. Just think about that for a minute. And when it comes to Christmas, the head of the World Health Organization today said this, an event canceled is better than a life canceled. So should we be scaling back our Christmas plans? How do you even have that conversation with your mom or your dad or your grandma? And if you're traveling, how can you be sure that you don't pick up and deliver COVID to family and friends? I want to bring in our panel of experts to discuss this. Dr. Eric Choi-Pena is an emergency room physician for Northwell Health System, and he's also Systems Director of Global Health. Peter Greenberg is a travel expert and News Nation contributor coming to us tonight live from Tanzania. And Darby Fox is a family therapist in the great state of Connecticut. Welcome to all three of you. I'm going to start with you, Dr. Choi-Pena. How did we end up here? How did this happen? Like, did we drop the ball or did we never pick up the ball? And did we screw it up from the get-go?
Well, you know, like everything in COVID, the answer is a little bit complicated and has kind of multiple levels of truth to it. Certainly, these variants exist because, you know, we didn't do an amazing job vaccinating the rest of the world. We've done a halfway decent job vaccinating our country. The European countries and the global north have done a good job vaccinating themselves. But, you know, we really need the entire world to be vaccinated in order to prevent the development of some of these variants. And, you know, it was really only a matter of time until we found a variant that was, able to dodge some of the immunity made by the vaccine.
It's weird, but a week ago, you know, very few people were worried about their Christmas travel. Very few people were worried about calling their parents and saying, thanks for getting that Christmas all ready. We're not coming. Kids, us, nobody, you know, like imagine that the disasters that these conversations. So on Friday, the White House COVID coordinator, his name is Jeff Zients. He said this, if you're vaccinated, we've done the right thing and we will get through this. For the unvaccinated, you're looking at a winter of severe illness and death for yourselves, your families and the hospitals. You may soon overwhelm. And that sounds, you know, dire. Turns out the former President Trump, thought it was smart enough to get a booster that he did it and he admitted it. So I'm going to play something from my colleague Dan Abrams' program that was just two programs before this one tonight. He had Bill O'Reilly on the show. And it turns out Bill and President Trump were on a stage together for what's called the history tour. And the question came. And I wasn't expecting it. I don't know who else was expecting it. I don't know if President Trump was expecting it. But Bill O'Reilly asked him, so did you get your booster? Anyway, this is how it all sort of transpired on Dan's show. Take a look.
And, you know, the booze... Yeah. There were about 11,000 people in that arena, and maybe, I don't know, 100 booed. But you would think that the whole crowd did by reading the corrupt media, because they're not interested in telling the truth. But President Trump is very proud that his administration developed that vaccine.
So, you know, there was President Trump, Darby Fox, telling everybody, yes, I got my booster. And when about 100 people in the crowd, core supporters, I should say, which is weird, you know, that very few times do core supporters boo President Trump. You know, about 100 people out of the 11,000 or so, Bill said, booed. So with that in mind, I kind of feel like that might have changed things for some people in the country. But how do you have this conversation with, you know, family members who are COVID deniers or vax deniers or who just don't think it's a big deal in their community, and you got to drop the bad news?
Well, I think it's important that at that point, especially with Trump saying, I got my booster, it brings us back to the reality. This is science, and it isn't about politics. It's a really important medical condition. So I think that, in a sense, that hopefully helps us as we go into this Christmas holiday, and we really want to remind people that you just have to take your precautions. get vaccinated, get your booster, mask if you need to. Be careful and vigilant about where you go. If you're going to a large family gathering, test before you go. Just those precautions should help decrease the anxiety that we're all starting to feel.
But how do you have the conversation when you've made the decision you're not going to go to call grandma or to call mom and dad or to call a family member who's gone to a lot of trouble and say, it's just not going to happen. We just don't think it's safe.
I think you just have to own that and say, I respect if you disagree, but we're doing the best we can for our family. And I think that this is what we're going to stick with this year. I don't think people need to really overly apologize or explain their position. And just hopefully we can be respectful that there are a variety of different opinions.
Okay, so Peter, I'm going to turn to you for those travelers who aren't going to tell anybody, no, we've put our trip off, and instead are going to do the trip. There you are in Tanzania. You're the world traveler like no one I know. First of all, what are we supposed to do? Should we be only wearing N95s on a plane now? Should we have a face shield on a plane now? Should we, you know, carry sanitizer with us? You can't sit 6 feet away from anybody on these planes now, and you're going to land right into a Christmas dinner somewhere. So what should our travel protocol be, and how should it change?
Well, it's interesting here because where I am right now in Tanzania, the vaccination levels are less than 7%, but it didn't stop me from coming. And like many frequent flyers, we're taking a calculated risk. The science is in. The anecdotal evidence is in that if you're vaccinated and boosted, you know what? You're not going to go to the hospital. You're not going to die. The odds are very much in your favor. It's basically taken, vaccination has, hospitalization and death off the table. So that means that a lot of frequent flyers are taking that calculated risk. Now, going back to your question of what happens to Granny, here's what's going on right now. The numbers are starting to come in. People are canceling trips, but they're not canceling travel. They're going to other destinations. So maybe they're not going to go see Granny, but they're not going to stop traveling. It's sort of part of our cultural DNA. You know, it's not that we want to travel. We need to travel. And when that's either interrupted or denied, we adjust. And we adjust by getting back out and trying another way to do it.
That's really interesting. I'm not going to go see Granny, but I'm going to go to, like, I don't know, Tijuana or something like that. So to that end, Peter, just button that one up and tell us who hates Americans right now. Like, who won't let us come in because we've got numbers going up.
Well, that list gets bigger every minute. We have Israel shutting down. We have Austria shutting down. We have the Netherlands shutting down till maybe March. Australia's already been shut down. New Zealand's still in a bubble. And we're seeing more and more restrictions on individual country levels. For example, France is not letting anybody from Britain in. So people are just starting to batten down the hatches. However, of the 27 different European Union countries, only about four or five are shut down. So a number of people that I know, instead of going to, let's say, Germany or Austria, they're going to France.
Yeah, I remember a whole bunch of people saying, you know, throughout the last year, we're going to Portugal, which is not something you hear people say all the time, but it was very open at the time. In Spain, same thing. People were going to Spain en masse. So, all right. So, Dr. Chalpana, if people are going to travel, a lot of times these countries have, you know, requirements. You have to have a negative test, and not just any old test, not the one that you can get in an hour. They say you have to have a PCR. And honest to God, even after 2 years, sometimes I have to do a double take and say, what is the difference between the antigen and PCR again? So would you do me the honors, please, and straighten this out once for all? I'm going to put a graphic up so that we can follow the bouncing ball and learn the difference. So the rapid antigen test. Tell me about that one and whether it's good or bad or what it's, you know, what its efficacy is.
Yeah. So the rapid antigen tests in some ways have changed the game. You know, we originally at the beginning of the pandemic were really poo-pooing them because they do have a false negative rate. So they have a false negative where you could have low-lying levels of COVID and still test negative with an antigen test. But the nice thing about them is they're very convenient. When the viral levels in your nose are high, they often are positive, and that is a very good correlate for when you are infectious. And the nice thing about the antigen test is a lot of these tests are on a card, so you can swab yourself. You can run a test. It runs in 15 minutes, and you'll have a, you know, single pink line negative, double pink line positive kind of test. So I think that they're great tests. They're not the gold standard. So, you know, if somebody feels sick or has symptoms of COVID, a negative test shouldn't really reassure them. But if you're feeling okay and you just want that extra layer of protection, protection before you walk into granny's house and you want to stand outside her door for 15 minutes, swab, make sure you swab negative and then enter the house. I think that's a great extra layer of protection that you can put in your armamentarium to make sure that you're not infectious. One of the nice things about Delta...
Dr. Choi Pena, if you want to go to my homeland, Canada, you have to have the PCR, and you have to get it within 72 hours of leaving, and sometimes have to wait 48 hours, sometimes longer to get it. So tell me about that one and why it's so much better.
Yeah, so the PCR test detects very small pieces of viral RNA in the swab, so it's very, very sensitive. And so people that test positive for COVID will test positive for many, many weeks after they've already cleared the test because there's still those remnants of RNA that are in your nose. But because of that, it's very, very sensitive. It's run on in a lab. It often takes... more than a few minutes to run. It can be done as quick as about an hour when it's prioritized for things like strokes and heart attacks where we need to know their COVID status quickly. But for most people that are testing for travel, you're right, it's going to take 24, 48, even 72 hours, which when you have a 72-hour limit on when the PCR can be resulted, creates a little bit of a logistical snafu. That's a bigger thing. The more people travel, unfortunately, that is a bigger problem. So the turnaround times get less and less, the more the demand on our system to test for travel.
Good luck getting one right now, right? Have you seen the lines, yeah. Doctor? Like, if you want to go through one of those drive-thrus, take a book.
Yeah, it's the testing right now. The delay is really on the front end. So the back end, the labs are actually not at capacity. But unfortunately, because there's such a demand and there aren't enough swabbers, we're seeing a lot of delays in the collection. And that's absolutely right. That's pretty ubiquitous in the Northeast.
God bless those swabbers. That's one of those. We got Mike Rowe coming on later. That's I say, which is like qualifies as a dirty job. Okay, so Darby, it's weird. I didn't realize this, but two of the most popular destinations any normal year, I'd say, of course. This year, I'm astounded. Orlando and Anaheim, which that's the Disney worlds and the Disneylands at Christmas. And if anybody watching right now has ever been to Disney World or Disneyland at Christmas, God bless you. Been there with you. I got the therapy. It's horrendous. If you're going to cancel that kind of trip, because that is a lot of exposure, right? If you're going to, what do you do to tell the kids who have been waiting on a trip to Disney? How do you tell them it's not going to happen?
Well, again, you just tell them you can't do it. And everybody's well aware, especially the kids, that COVID really is a real concern. And you better be ready with a plan to do something else that sounds at least somewhat enticing. But I think that as long as you can say to them, we can't go now, but we will delay it till this summer, or we'll go for spring break as soon as things get a little better, they're actually pretty good at understanding if you give them a plan or a date when they might be able to go. They've all been wearing masks. Everybody understands this.
Yeah, not my kids. Listen, they're beyond that
they
now,
might not
but
be
I can't
happy,
imagine.
But they understand it.
The rooms and the walls would be shaking at that point. So, Peter, I still can't believe that 100 million Americans are planning to still travel. I'm guessing that as these news headlines, keep coming out and they start to get a little more worried, that a lot of people will drop off and maybe there'll be flights opening up for those who got, squeezed out. But what about those cruises? I mean, are the cruises changing their plans at all? Are they still full steam ahead? Pardon the pun there.
I'll forgive you for the pun. Actually, what's going on is that they are requiring vaccinations for people to get on the ship. That's crew, officers, and passengers. They're doing testing on a regular basis on the ship, and they figured out their contact tracing right now and be able to physically isolate anybody who tests positive. We just had a situation with Royal Caribbean just yesterday where more than 60 people were tested positive, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to the hospital, because the people who were testing positive had already been vaccinated, in many cases had their booster shot. So keep that in mind. The one issue that's going to happen right now, and we mentioned Canada before, is going the one step further on air travel. And that's this. In Canada, you cannot make an airline reservation unless you can show proof of vaccination. That is not yet the case in the U.S. The airlines desperately want to do that in the U.S., but no airline wants to go first because they don't want to lose market share. The U.S. government wants to do that rule, but right now their mask and vaccination mandate is being tested in the courts, and it's headed for the Supreme Court. So until that's resolved, those vaccination mandates are not going to be in place on airlines, but I wouldn't be surprised by the first half of the year it comes into play.
Well, forget driving over the border or flying over the border to Canada either. If you don't have a vax card, you're not going. And if you go to, you know, Niagara Falls and you want to see it from the nicer side, nope, you're going to be skunked there too if you don't have your vaccination card. So maybe that will, you know, change people's minds if they want those luxuries. Okay, so the next question I have is about Delta versus the Omicron. And Dr. Troy Pena, I know you're the guy who can help me. I keep hearing the rumors, right? Oh, well, Delta is more deadly. Omicron is more catchy. But, you know, we're starting to hear that it's now 75% of the new cases across the country are Omicron. And I'm assuming that that will mean some deaths.
Yeah, I think it will. I think that it will mean some deaths predominantly, like we've seen throughout the entire pandemic in the post-vaccine period, in people who are unvaccinated. People who are vaccinated, even with vaccines that aren't mRNA vaccines that are available mostly in the United States and Europe, are very well protected against severe disease, hospitalization, death. You know, we hear case numbers, and I think we have a lot of PTSD from last year when we saw lots of high cases and then lots of deaths and hospitalizations. I don't think we're guaranteed to see that, especially in the areas of the nation like New York, which is going through a surge right now, where we're seeing really high case numbers and not very high hospitalizations yet. And I think that's because we have a very vaccinated population. So the cases really don't represent the severity. Omicron is a little bit less severe in even the unvaccinated people, at least when we looked at the South African data. But certainly if you're vaxxed and vaxxed and boosted, you know, you're still, you know, very, very, very unlikely to even need medical care. A lot of people are just getting these positive tests because they're testing for travel, because they're testing because they're about to see family, and they're surprised that they're positive. And so I think there's a, you know, we can say there's going to be a million new cases a day, but I think those are very different cases than what we saw a year ago. And I'm very optimistic that even though this is going to be a surge, it's going to be a very different surge, at least in the vaccinated population.
I mean, it's 1 degree of separation. It just happened to my family. Somebody got tested for a party and then it came back positive and they thought, oh, that's got to be a false positive. And it wasn't. So no symptoms, nothing at all. But there went the trip. Boom, gone. Yeah. They're not traveling for Christmas. OK, so, Darby, there is this whole other element that I think a lot of people debate and discuss, and that is that, you know, health is also mental health, right? And if you're about to tell your, you know, 85-year-old grandmother who lives alone and has been just waiting to see these grandchildren, we're not coming, I mean, there's going to be some effect there. That's not a victimless crime, right? What do you do about taking care of the loneliness and the depression? I mean, the holidays can be some of the most depressing times. And if that's what happens to you, if you're that grandmother, what do you do?
Actually, that's a great question, because I think that is part of the fear that's happening right now is thinking, what are we going to do if we go back to that isolation and loneliness? So I think what you do again is explain a time that you can come. Hopefully this is the surge will be through this part of the beginning of the winter and you can plan another time. You certainly have to do FaceTime if there are people in the area, neighbors, friends that you know that you can connect with your family. Very important, because the loneliness does bring up a PTSD that the mental health is something that we're very much concerned about. I myself am concerned about college kids starting to think, am I not going back to college after two very rough years?
Yeah, I would think so. So, Peter, and I don't even know if, like, you're in Tanzania. Is that even something that comes up? I usually look to Europe and further east to find out what the trends are that are going to, you know, come here. And what's the story there? Are the Omicron numbers going through the roof? Are there fewer deaths? Should we even be worried about getting Omicron? Is it like a bad flu? Might I lose my taste buds for another year or have a long-haul symptom? Like, are you hearing any of those reports where you are?
Yes, well, as the doctor said, if you're fully vaccinated and you have your booster shot, it is a calculated risk that you're not going to end up in the hospital or die. But here, where you have vaccination rates of under 7%, obviously those numbers are going up and they're going to continue to go up until they can get the vaccination numbers up. There's a subtexture among all passengers and all travelers, which was with us at the beginning of the pandemic, and that's this. As much as I want to travel, as much as I want to go from point A to point B, I don't want to get to point B and get stuck and not be able to get home. So if there's any trend at all, is that people may be canceling international trips, but they're going to stay traveling on the domestic side.
You know, that's a good point. And Dr. Troy Pena, just maybe button that up by telling me, like, when people say, oh, it's no big deal, it's just Omicron, you're not going to go to the hospital, just be like having a bad cold. Is that true? And again, what about the long haul stuff? Because I can handle a cold, but I cannot handle not being able to taste chicken parm, you know, for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're really starting to live in two worlds. We're living in the world of the vaccinated and the world of the unvaccinated. And in the world of the unvaccinated, Omicron isn't substantially different than any of the other variants of COVID. It can still cause long-haul symptoms. It can still make you lose your sense of taste and smell. It can still put you in the hospital and make you really sick. I have a patient now in the hospital that I'm taking care of that has likely Omicron that's very, very sick. So that is the case in the unvaccinated world. In the vaccinated world, all of those risks are reduced, especially with mRNA vaccines that have been boosted. You really are looking at the same level of risk as you had during Delta. And that's the good news. The bad news is that the non-mRNA vaccines, especially the ones used like in Tanzania, you know, the viral vector vaccines, seem to be pretty useless in preventing infection. It's still to be seen how good they're going to be at preventing hospitalization or death. But the problem means that there's just going to be more COVID circulating, whether you're a breakthrough infection with a vaccine in the U.S. or any of the vaccines worldwide. We're just going to see a lot more virus circulating very quickly in a very short period of time.
One last quick question for you, Darby, and that's this. Healthcare workers right now, talk about PTSD. If they're looking at what's happening right now and thinking about the next month at their job in the ER, what advice would you give them to not say, forget it, I quit, I am not doing this? Because we can't afford to have the percentage of them sick with the numbers that are going in, right, let alone those who say, I'm just not going through this again. It's just too much.
Well, I think in fairness to our healthcare workers, we would like to ask people to consider a vaccination, because it is a brutal thought to go through what they've just gone through, the endless hours and really watching people very ill that they can't do a lot for, and putting their own lives, their own families at risk. So I think that what we want to do, and a lot of the healthcare workers do realize that this is a little different. Omicron is coming through as much milder and we aren't seeing as much hospitalization, and ask them to endure. But I think it is an important thing to consider. Let's think about the healthcare workers. How do we take care of them?
Yeah, I agree.
What's our responsibility?
And I hope all of you have a wonderful holiday, safe with family, if it's okay. I'm not going to advocate one way or the other here, but it's been good to have all your expertise tonight. Thank you, Dr. Troy Pena, Dr. Peter Greenberg, and Darby Fox. Thank you all three. Happy holidays.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Okay, coming up, we're going to totally change gears here from sewage pipes to singing pipes. Mike Rowe has found yet another dirty job, and he is going to sing all about it coming up next. The countdown is on. Just five more sleeps until Santa wedges that jolly old belly down your chimney after hitting up about a billion chimneys right before yours. Think about it. That is a very dirty job. Mike Rowe knows a thing or two about that. He's been doing dirty jobs for decades now. And this year, he's not only relaunching that show, but he has climbed the charts all the way to number one with a holiday song that is right on brand. Well, if that ain't the voice of an angel, the host of Dirty Jobs is here with me now. Mr. Mike Rowe, never thought I'd see you dressed up in that. Was that lingerie? I'm not sure it was. It works for you. Congratulations.
That was actually an original Santa Claus suit, hand sewn by John Rich's grandmother, Granny Rich. And he gave the top part and he wore the bottom part. And then we just let the art wash over us.
The art just washed over all of us, and you knocked Adele out of number one for the most downloaded songs in the country. Did you expect that to happen?
Well, it's weirder than that. The day after this thing premiered, John called me at home and he said, Mike Rowe, you're not going to believe this, but you're right under Adele. And I said, I always wanted to be under Adele. And then the next day he called and he said, Mike Rowe, you're not going to believe it. Now you're on top of Adele. So, yeah.
Have you called Adele about this, by the way?
I haven't, but I'm hoping she watches your show so we can connect somewhere down the road. This has been such a kick. All the money we raise goes to our charities. It's a goofy song. We wrote it in the bathroom during a commercial break of one of his shows. And it just goes to show you, you've been in the business long enough to know the stuff you think is going to work, the stuff you work so hard on, you know, half the time, nobody cares. The random weird stuff you throw against the wall, you never know what's going to stick.
No, you're right. I've heard big-time TV executives say if anyone out there thinks they know what's going to work, they're lying. They just think they know. But this song's really catchy, and that is unmistakably the Oak Ridge Boys that are, you know, accompanying you guys. You said that the two of you, you know, wrote in the bathroom and you know, really organically put it together. But how did you get the Oak Ridge Boys on tap?
Well, John Rich knows everybody. I mean, he's a country legend, and I was doing his show. And during this break, he says, Mike Rowe, you know who's got a dirty job? Santa's got a dirty job. And I said, yeah, I guess he does. He literally went in the bathroom, wrote the chorus that you just played, and came out with his iPhone and played it for me. He said, Mike Rowe, I swear to God, I think I just wrote the chorus of the song. And of course, all I can hear is what he's doing in the background in the bathroom. I'm like, John, if you actually wrote a chorus to a song in a bathroom, then we need to call the Oak Ridge Boys. We need to record it tomorrow. And we need to get it out on the air in time for Christmas. And son of a gun, if you didn't do it.
And now you've got even more material for, you know, now songwriting is a dirty job, as it turns out, because that's what he did when he was in there. All right. So talk to me about, by the way, the song's great. It's been going through my head all day as I was listening to it. So it is terrific. And I hope you have tremendous success, like Mariah Carey's success with the Christmas tune.
Hey, I'm shooting for ahead, Grandma got run over by a reindeer. If we can chase that down, I'll be happy.
That's a good one, too. I think you're going to do better than that, even. So, okay, I think the last time I talked to you, I asked you about dirty jobs because you were doing, you know, another show, Somebody's Got to Do It. And then you got the Fox show, which is called How America Works. And then all of a sudden, maybe it's the magic touch of, show, you know, coming on my show, but Dirty Jobs is back.
Well, obviously, it was your show, but if it was anything beyond that, it might have been the fact that essential work became headline news again. Everybody is talking about the modern definition of a good job, whatever that means. And so a lot of people reached out and said, look, this was the granddaddy of essential working shows. You should bring it back and go out into the world during the lockdowns and show America what work looks like in this day and age. And I thought, you know what? It's going to hurt, but it's not a crazy idea. So I called the network and they said, sure. And there I am, you know, back in the thick of it again, older than I've ever been. Everything hurts. Okay. It all hurts, but
I'm with you.
It's a terrific show. And I'm really honored to give it another crack.
You just gave yourself another idea. Your next show is Everything Hurts. I think that's a good one too. Oh, there's a cure for that, by the way. And here I am telling you when you already
there's
know
a cure
it.
For it's that,
called,
all right.
It's called. Okay, hold it. I was about to talk about your brand new whiskey, Noble Tennessee Whiskey, and you pull a glass of wine out.
We're sold out. We sold 12,000 bottles in 3 days. Noble is my pop's last name, my granddad, Carl Noble, K-N-O-B-E-L. Dirty Jobs was a tribute to him. So when we rolled the show back, I thought, you know what? I got a buddy in Tennessee, and he's got some terrific Tennessee whiskey, 5 years in the barrel. And so I said, let's just do a limited run to raise some money for the foundation. Holy crap, man. It sold out overnight. And so now we're trying to figure out, you know, how to do another chunk, which we're going to do in January, but it's delicious and all the money goes to my foundation. So it's a nice way to celebrate the return of Dirty Jobs and
it's pretty impressive.
You know, enjoy a sensible beverage while you're watching.
And it's a good way to, you know, cure those aching bones, if you know what I mean. By the way, it's Micro Works and then the Fold of Honor. Those are the two charities that the song proceeds are going to, and the whiskey. I was going to say to you, you can't get a bottle? Oh, I know a guy, but I guess the guy I know can't get a bottle. Darn.
I have four left, but we're going to get a new tranche in January.
Three.
And so
you have three left. Do you want to know why you have three left?
Okay, I guess.
Because it's... because it's my birthday coming up, and I know you all remembered right. that.
I got
December
it done.
December 29, my friend.
It's on its way. It's on its
Mike,
way.
Mike, I love talking to you. I can't wait for Dirty Jobs. The premiere is on the Discovery Channel January 2nd, 8 p.m. I will be watching. So will everybody watching right now. And then you have to come on again and talk to me about it again, okay?
Done. Look, I'm so delighted that your show's a smash. I was honored to be on it a year ago, and I'm thrilled to be back. So anytime.
It's good to stay on for a year.
Right?
Thanks, Mike. Love you.
Especially
hey, Merry
this
Christmas,
year.
My friend.
Merry Christmas,
right?
Hon.
Amen.
Take care.
Amen. Okay, take care. When we come back, I am going to switch gears completely because there was a story that I saw over the weekend that just blew me away. A harrowing case of 19-year-old Maddie Allen missing and then found a week later, but trapped in a man's basement. Imagine the journey to recovery. Ed Smart knows all about it. The father of Elizabeth Smart is just ahead with insight. Five days until Christmas Eve, a time when families are blessed to be together. But for a family in Utah, Christmas has come early, sort of. Their daughter, Madeline Allen, just 19 years old, went missing a week ago tonight. But she was found by police on Saturday, and perhaps just in the nick of time. She was trapped in a basement, a coal storage area to be exact, in the home of a 39-year-old man named Brent Neil Brown. Brown's been arrested. He's facing multiple charges, including aggravated kidnapping, rape, and obstruction of justice. Here's how the crime unfolded. Maddie went missing from her dorm at Snow College in Utah. The next day, her parents got a suspicious text from her phone simply saying, "I love you." Police traced that phone 87 miles away from Madeline's dorm where she was last seen. So, it was in the town of Loa. They began a house-to-house search in Loa, and at one home, they saw a person with a small frame and blonde hair when they peered through a basement window. So they knocked on the door, and the man who answered said, he was home alone. He wasn't. Maddie was in the basement, naked and covered in coal. Her personal effects and ID were upstairs in a suitcase along with a gun. Madeline said she'd been held there for 5 days and that Brown threatened to go after her and her sister's family if she tried to run away. I'm joined now by Ed Smart. He's the father of Elizabeth Smart, who herself was kidnapped in Utah out of her bed in 2002 and found alive 9 months later. Ed, it's good to see you. And we always meet under these circumstances. But when I heard about Maddie's story, I could not believe the number of similarities, the threats against her family, taking her away and keeping her, you know, in places where no one would be able to see her. And then but 9 months later, you found Elizabeth. 5 days later, the police found Maddie. This must be just an incredible story for you to take in as well.
Well, it's just a moment to rejoice in. I mean, the day that Elizabeth came home was just overwhelming to us. And, you know, I'm sure that that is very much the way it is for the Allen family, and we're so happy for Maddie that she is home safe and that, you know, life can move forward. The not knowing during that 5 days or the 9 months is just incredible and painful, but what a Christmas present to have her come home and to be there safe and sound. That's just a blessing.
Do you know if Elizabeth knows about Maddie's story?
I'm sure she does. You know, the publicist that we worked with has also been working with them, and so I'm sure Elizabeth is well aware of it. And you know, it's just one of those happy moments to hear that, you know, the end result was something that was wonderful. And
let me ask you, Ed.
So happy, the end happy result, for them.
The end result truly is something to rejoice about, but it isn't the end result. I think if anyone knows it more, it's you. There's a journey ahead for Maddie and for her family surviving this horror. What advice can you give to her family in order to help not only themselves but their daughter survive this?
Well, it is a journey. I remember roughly the day after, the comment was made to us, well, you think you've been through hell already. It hasn't even begun. And I thought, don't tell me that, because nothing could be worse than having our daughter lost. And now we have her home. So nothing can be worse. It is difficult and it is hard to go through the stages of a trial, trying to bring justice about. And really, the bottom line is trying to avoid it from the perpetrator from getting back out there and hurting somebody else again. And, that's something that, we don't want those type of people out in the public, basically predatory efforts to try and take our children. And, certainly with her age, I think there's a really important lesson to be learned, and that is, when you're online and you're, chatting with somebody, you can't assume that you've earned their trust and that you can, take chances. And I think that's really, really a take home for every parent and for every young person out there. You want to make sure that, if you're meeting somebody, they are who they say they are, that, being out in a public spot rather than, going with somebody, I think that's a very, very difficult situation. So we're just so glad to hear that there is a happy ending to this nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, that is a big difference between Elizabeth's case and Madeline's case, in that she did meet, reportedly, the man in the chat room, and that he did pick her up. But no matter what, that crime is a crime. Kidnapping, rape, and obstruction of justice has nothing to do with meeting someone online. It is a crime, period. I do want to ask you a little bit about
Absolutely.
What you just said, Ed, and that is, and I've got about 30 seconds left, the parole situation, that's got to be just a horrible thing to have to go through.
Well, I think that, you just have to take it a day at a time. But one of the most important things is to know what's in front of you, know what's going to come up, what Maddie's going to have to go through, whether there's going to have to be testifying. A lot of things are, the family's just unaware of. Certainly we were. And so, those that are fortunate to have their children come back home. The prosecution process is very difficult, but one of the most important things is to know what's coming up and to be able to deal with that in a manner that you're aware of, rather than being taken by surprise.
Ed, I am so thankful to be talking to you, and I can't thank you enough. And please wish Elizabeth well for us as well. And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, and Merry Christmas to the Allens.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for that. And that leads me to our quiz question for tonight. In 2020, there were almost 90,000 active missing persons cases in America. What percentage of them involved someone under 21? There are your choices. The answer after the break. What percentage of the nearly 90,000 missing cases last year involved kids under the age of 21? Turns out, 43%, the middle one, which equates to 38,869, which is a startling number. If you want more information, you can go to fbi.gov or National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. We'll see you tomorrow night.